Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post a Zolt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at dungeonsmaster.com, and welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Everyone. We have a very special guest with us this evening. It is Sean Merwin, co-writer of this season of Encounters. Hi, Sean. How you doing? Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Great. I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on.
Excellent. And Derek, you're with us also?
Of course, as always.
Of course. So I guess tonight we're going to talk about D&D Encounters, War of Everlasting Darkness, and we're going to be asking Sean a few questions, seeing if we can wiggle some top secret info from him. Give her.
Well, why don't we start with a full formal intro? So Sean,
okay.
Why don't you tell the people who you are and why we want to talk to you?
Oh, well, my name is Sean Merwin. I am a freelance RPG designer doing a lot of work recently for Wizards of the Coast, including the War of Everlasting Darkness, which is the current D&D Encounter season. I've been freelancing for Wizards since about 2001. That was mostly doing work for organized play campaigns like Living Greyhawk, Living Forgotten Realms, and Zendric Expeditions. And starting with the advent of 4th edition, I have been doing more work for their R&D team, products like the Halls of Undermountain, Assault on Nightworm Fortress, to name a few.
Excellent. Well, again, I'll echo Mark's sentiment. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us on this. As you know, we're both huge D&D Encounter nerds. If it's possible to be on the second run of the D&D nerd ladder, we are certainly there with our D&D Encounters enthusiasm.
Yes, so, it is a welcome place for all of us.
Yes, yes, indeed. So, I guess we'll just sort of fire off some questions at you. And by all means, if you've got some stuff you want to just throw at us, you want to volunteer some information or shamelessly plug any of the stuff you're working on, we certainly welcome that. So, but let's talk a little bit about the War of Everlasting Darkness. So, one of the things that I'm always curious about is we've got three authors listed on this adventure. You being the first one, I don't know if that's just because it's alphabetical or if because you were the number one guy, but can you tell us a little bit about the collaborative process here? How do you get three authors working on one adventure and bringing it into one cohesive piece?
From what I know, James Wyatt was and is the lead designer, which means in Wizards of the Coast terms, he creates the plan for the product. He puts down on paper his thoughts about how many pages it's going to be, and then within that how many chapters and so on, and then based on that outline it goes out to the freelancers who will fill in that outline basically. And in this case, I believe that James and Steve were going to be working on the War of Everlasting Darkness. And it came to be that they needed an extra hand for whatever reason. And so they asked me if I wanted to join in and sent me the information about what the season was going to be about. And I couldn't say no, seeing the plan that James had put together and the work that Steve had done before I got there, because it just seemed like such a cool story. And since it was a new twist on what Encounters had been before, I just wanted to get my hands dirty on such a thing. So based on that initial outline from James, and based on one chapter that James had written, or one session, I should say, that James had written to give us an idea of what they were going for, Steve and I divided up the work, decided who was going to work on which session, shared some ideas, sat down one morning at Origins just after the outline had reached us. We figured out we were both going to be at Origins for a few days, so we set aside some time to sit and talk about how the story was going to flow and where the story was going to link from one session to the next. And we hammered that out and then left Origins, came back to our respective desks and worked on our sessions.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, to for that kind of what would you say, that kind of timing, I mean, where's Steve located? Is Steve close by to you?
No, I think he's in Chicago.
He's in Chicago, so to coordinate all that kind of stuff, I mean, that must have been nightmarish with emails and all that stuff.
Well, it's, you know, it's nightmarish only in the sense that of any writing is nightmarish, because when you work with people like Steve and James who are so creative, it just blows my mind. You know, it's like playing. You know, it's not work. At that point, when you're getting the ideas, everything's flowing, and you're just bouncing, you know, bouncing ideas and plots and ways that we can make the story richer, you know, bouncing them off each other. It's a writer's playground. You know, when it gets to be work a little bit is when you have to actually put the words on the page.
Believe me, as someone who's been writing a D&D blog for coming up on 4 years now, I know exactly what you mean as far as the work involved to just get the words on the page. So
yeah, it's a process like any other craft, and you just have to hone your process over time until you get to the point where it becomes less work and more, you know, more of just a process of moving from step A to step B to step C, and not having to agonize over every detail.
Now, are you an avid gamer yourself?
I am. I started playing D&D when AD&D first came out, so around, you know, 1978 or so, when I was very, very young. And I've played every edition since then. I play games as often as I can. You know, at least once a day, my family and I sit down and try to play a game of some sort. You know, whether it be just cards or you know, something, a simple game. I just played Life today with my daughter, the board game Life.
Oh,
you know, just always something to keep the mind moving and keep the fun.
Well, it's good because Derek and I were talking in our last podcast. We were just talking about how much fun we're having with this encounter so far, this season of encounters. And I'm just saying that, you know, as much as James Wyatt and Steve Townsend and all the other people were involved in encounters, it seems like there was that third party that has come in now and has just kind of made it that much more dynamic. Or maybe it's just the fact that it's kind of like a, like they said at the start, a mixture of D&D Next, right?
Yeah, it, well, when the idea was first pitched, it was, we want to get back to the idea that D&D is more than just combat. And, you know, Encounters for the first 10 seasons was essentially that. It was a combat. A few of the seasons or sessions within seasons would try to do a little bit of role playing, a little bit, maybe a skill challenge or something, some exploration. But in the end, it always came back to that. Here's the one big combat. And as great as that can be to play, old school gamers or gamers who have started to play D&D Next can see that, you know, there is another part of the game that can be just as great as the combat if it is done correctly. So being done correctly is the hard part for us in this sense, because we're trying to take a game that was made to be encounter after encounter after encounter of combat and turn it into, you know, something where all three pillars could be shown, could be highlighted, you know, in one session.
Let me say that to echo Mark's sentiment, it's been a refreshing change this season to have moved away from show up, fight monsters, go home, show up, fight monsters, go home. Exactly to your point, the more experienced and more mature gamers came out Wednesday nights for the first couple of seasons, and when they realized that's all it was, we lost a lot of our more experienced players. For the newer players that have shown up, we always felt that it gave them an incomplete picture. And this season really has done a good job of taking a step back, expanding the field of vision, and showing new players or you know, newer players that it's more than combat, and it can be fun with more than combat. Whereas we're also seeing, at least in my stores and where I'm playing at two different stores every week, I'm seeing a return of some of those more mature gamers, the more experienced gamers, the ones who came out originally, got bored and left. This new format has excited them to the point where they needed to come out, try it, see what it was like. And so far, after just 4 weeks, the responses have been overwhelmingly positive.
I am very pleased to hear that. I've had the same experience in the game store that I'm running War of Everlasting Darkness at. We have two tables. One table, it's all essentially 12 to 14-year-old boys who have never played D&D before. And then there's another table with more experienced gamers who have been playing for long enough to know D&D back when it was first and second edition. And we're seeing the same sort of thing. The younger table, which I took, we're not quite playing it like other people are playing it, let's put it that way. But we're still having fun. But with the other table, you can see that the people who have played in the past are saying, I remember this game. I remember having fun with this game, when I was younger. And in fact, during play testing for this season, and as I've gathered feedback from people I know around and about, it's obvious that there is that line between the older gamers who have played previous editions who are saying, thank you so much for bringing the D&D I remember back, whereas the people who may have only started playing with third or fourth edition are saying, well, I really want more fights. And you're going to get that, especially since the whole encounters program turned itself into kind of a self-selecting process. Like you said, the people who liked it have stayed, because they like rolling dice and combat and not really thinking too deeply about story or interaction. So they became the audience. So now when you throw something new at them, gamers are kind of a reactionary crew, whereas if you change something that they like, they don't often accept it with grace, let's say.
It's those edition wars, eh?
Yeah, exactly. But there are always some people who started with fourth edition, who only knew that this is how the game has played, and when you throw a puzzle at them, or you give them a chance to role play and give some real meat to the role playing and give some consequences for the role playing, they really eat that up, and so you know that there is an audience for that, even with the new gamers.
But even with this season, the one thing I noticed, to elaborate a little bit on Derek's plus, is not only does it give the players an opportunity to go back to the old roots for the older crowd, but the DMs, and I find that I've ever done for Encounters is DM, and I go in there. And as a DM, I'm going, wow, my hands are free. I can do what I want and express what I want and make it as expressive as I want, as the characters as flamboyant as I want for my players. And I find that that's been such a big stress off my shoulders instead of sitting there and just monitoring a bunch of creature numbers.
Yep. It is a great gift to give a DM to be able to do that. And at some point, there needs to be something from Wizards or from the fan community to help DMs who have never had that experience or have had trouble doing that, give them training or give them tips or give them the opportunity to understand that the game doesn't have to be played just by the numbers and just on the page, and help them become the DM that players like us want to be at their table. And I'm not sure how easily that's done or how well that can be done, but I'm hoping that there is a way to take the best of all the editions that we've seen and give the opportunity for the game to be played in many ways.
So that's probably a good segue. We talk about, looking at all the different editions, and we mentioned earlier that this season is clearly modeled after some of the D&D Next playtesting that we've been seeing. What can you tell us about the D&D Encounters program, specifically maybe anything you might have heard about what's coming up? Are you involved with any future projects? Did they give you any hint of what might be to come?
I'm in the strange position with all the NDAs that I can only talk about what I don't know. So I can say that, yes, I have been involved in some of the upcoming D&D Encounters stuff. I think I can safely say that what you will see in the future is experimentation, not necessarily going exactly like what we saw in the War of Everlasting Darkness with no short rests and, you know, things of that ilk. But there will be, you know, other experimentation, kind of like you are seeing with D&D Next, in the sense where they'll try one thing and see how that works and what the feedback is, and then try something in a different direction and see how that works and what that feedback is. So I think what we will see going forward is that kind of experimentation where we'll try to tweak things here, try to tweak things there, and get the feedback on how the players enjoy it.
Very good.
My question to you would be, what would you like to see if you could see something different in upcoming encounter seasons?
Hey, Derek, I'm not ready for the guest to question me. No, I'm kidding.
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. All right, yeah. Derek?
You know what? I like to see this experimentation, if for no other reason than to keep players on their toes. I know one of the criticisms that I've had, at least I had initially from some of the players, was, as you mentioned, no short rest. And it took some of them sort of a while to get their head around that, where they were saying, well, you know, my character has spent 4 days traveling. There's been plenty of times he should have been able to take a short rest, an extended rest. What the heck? And, you know, I had to explain to them every week at the beginning that, you know, you have to take some of the things you think you know and put them on the shelf for this season of encounters, because we're trying some new things. And in order for them to work better, we need to, you know, for example, with the short rest, we need to just say, forget it. You're not getting short rests, and we're not going to bother trying to come up with an in-game reason for it. We're just going to say no short rests. You're here Wednesday night. While you're here this Wednesday night, you do not get a short rest. And so it's that kind of excuse me, it's that kind of tweak of the existing rules where, you know, you're going to make exceptions or you're going to change something, or you can introduce a brand new piece and give the players a chance to try something different.
I myself personally, I'd like to see one thing I really, really missed from second edition that you didn't find a lot even in third edition or fourth edition were random encounters. I mean, I know that encounters used to, I think March of the Phantom Brigade kind of started something like that. They called them paths instead of random encounters. They had it in this season also. Basically, is they say, okay, well, if you decide to do this, then this is going to happen. But if you decide to do this, this is going to happen. But I'd like, hey, if you're marching for 4 days, well, guess what? You might meet up with some orcs. You might meet up with some sturges. You might meet up with whatever. I've always liked those random encounters where you just kind of roll a percentile dice and go from there. Other experimentation is, I don't know. I find that this season so far has been perfect for me. So I really like the, I guess the only, not even negative, but I don't understand the leveling process like Derek was saying. Well, what Derek was saying is I don't understand it, where you can't get a short rest. There's no in-game explanation. But the point is, you made the rule, you follow the ruling. But I guess another question I can throw to you is basically, why did James and yourself and Steve decide to go every week level-wise?
I think I didn't make the decision personally, so I can only, you know, suppose. But I think it was to answer the criticism of encounters, and I'm sure you two know it very well. We only can play up to third level. We'd really love to play, you know, which I believe, if I'm listening to your podcast correctly, that didn't you, one of you actually run a fourth through sixth level?
Derek did.
I did that twice since the seasons have begun, and it has really both seasons when I did it, there were certainly pluses and minuses. I mean, the huge advantage is players that are getting bored with the 1-3, 1-3, 1-3, 1-3, now they've got something a little bit more advanced. So it gives them that sense of continuity. That gives them that sense that I'm now working, just like at a home game, I'm putting the time in to get to know this character, to develop this character. Not only that, but if the party, everyone at the table is doing the same thing, you really get to know everybody's character, which always, in my opinion, makes the game better. If people playing the game see the characters rather than the players, that's always a plus. That really, the challenge for me as the DM was it was more work. And some weeks I was able to balance the monsters correctly, and some weeks I was not. So the fear for me in playing up like that is that, you know, if I don't do my job correctly every week, you're going to have a table of players that feel disappointed. The other drawback was that D&D Encounters is a program designed to introduce the hobby and the game to new players. Well, if you're a brand new player and we're playing up, we're starting at level 5 and it's your first time, jumping in at level 5 is going to be a whole lot harder than jumping in at level 1 or 2. So, you know, we had to balance pros and cons along the way. And I love this season that it's going every level, a level every week. I think enough is happening each week that the players get to feel the feel for their character at that level. But I'm really looking for, now that we're going into week 5, like, this is the first time we're going to see characters of that level with encounters that are balanced for characters of those levels.
Yeah, I think you had a problem also, a little problem with the attendance, right? Once or one or two of the sessions, Derek, you had 2 4-6 level guys show up, and then the rest were like 1-3, and they had to adjust it. And
Yeah. You really, either everyone in the store runs the advanced level, which basically closes the door on new players, or you run the risk that if you don't have full attendance at a store that maybe doesn't have enough to run more than one or two tables, that, you know, it becomes an additional challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we're getting a little off topic.
Well, no, that was one of the fears I had when I was, you know, going through the outline, was exactly that. If a new player who's never played D&D before shows up at the store, you know, how easy is it going to be to bring that player into the game? As it turns out, I found out the hard way when I had about 10 players who have never played D&D before show up ready to play. Our character creation session went a little differently than I had been expecting, because I was expecting one table of players, most of whom were experienced, and I got many more players than I was expecting, very few of whom were experienced. So it turned into, at first I made very simplified versions of each of the characters, still using fourth edition rules, but, you know, giving them one power instead of many powers, and giving them a standard set of, you know, if you're a rogue, your armor class is this. And so I made it very simple to get them the feel for the game, which we used the first couple of sessions. And then I started adding little bits of new rules in the sessions as it went. And now next session, we're going to be using all the rules. They're going to have characters made from the character builder. So we're going to be playing full on fourth edition. It's worked okay so far. So we'll see how it goes when we're, you know, knee deep in all of the rules. But I think fourth edition is probably a tough game to teach a new player at higher level, as opposed to maybe, hopefully D&D Next will be, there will be less powers, less rules to wade through trying to explain to a new player how combat works. But of course, if you de-emphasize combat, then it makes it easier to bring a person in, let them play in the exploration, you know, pillar, let them play in the interaction pillar, and then bring in the combat aspect of the game a little more slowly.
You did that well in fourth session anyway.
I haven't played the fourth session yet. I'm a week behind, so I'm playing the fourth session on Wednesday.
My personal criticisms, and again, I mean, In a season where the bar has been set so high, my criticisms should certainly not be seen in incredible negative light. But we are actually finding that it is taking a long time to get through the sessions, and that in much of the credit for that though goes to the players. They've got a greater interest in the adventure, And so they are taking more time at each phase of their, you know, their different settings as we go along. There's all the little scenes. But I know, like, for example, this week four, when we played it last week, I only got to play it one time this week, unfortunately, but it took like almost 3 hours. Mm. We had a great time, and there was the majority of that time was role playing, probably 2 hours role playing and only 1 hour combat. But it's certainly a change from some weeks in previous seasons where you show up, you sit down, you fight monsters, you go home, 45 minutes, the night's done.
Yeah, that is, again, you know, another fear I had when I was looking at the outline was, how are we going to get all this done in each session in, you know, 2 hours? And a lot of it is the fourth edition mindset of, you know, combats have to kind of be a little bit longer. And so to try to get DMs, even DMs who have played previous editions, to remember that combats only need to go two rounds, or you don't need to pull out the map, or you can, you know, tweak things a bit to make combat go faster. It was important to try to keep DMs mindful of that. And, you know, during playtesting, I was definitely wary of time for the playtests I ran. And things were tweaked to try to get it down to a reasonable interval.
Well, it's been extremely fun. It's been extremely fun so far, and I noticed that as Derek stating, the role playing is taking a lot of time, but it is such a refreshing outlook. I mean, as a DM, all it is interaction at the table, and all of a sudden you look at your watch and you're going, holy smokes, you've been here already? I got to get going. And then you get the rest of it going, right? Like, the combat's kind of, at my table anyway, has been very nonsensical. Okay, well, we do combat. Okay, well, we had fun, opening the trap door, for example, if you've heard the recent podcast. You know, all that kind of stuff. So it's been a breath of fresh air.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that, you know, it's, from most of the feedback I've been hearing, it's been going similarly to the two of your experiences, so I appreciate that. But don't worry about criticism. I've heard so much criticism, much harsher than, you know, any human being should ever hear, including someone wished I would be hit by a bus. So, you know, as long as you're not, you know, wishing ill on me or my family, I am more than happy to hear any criticisms from anyone.
All right, I throw a +10 reflex save your way.
Thank you.
Nice.
Believe me, I could use every plus.
Yeah. We were talking a minute ago about the length of the encounters. Like I said, I play at two different stores, so I get to see a couple of different DMs and their styles. I mean, obviously, if I'm running the table, I'm focused on my table, but we all play side by side, so I can hear what's going on. And this season, one of the stores where I play, I actually get a chance to actually play instead of DM. So I'm actually getting a chance to interact with players I've never worked with before and see other DM styles. And I think that the complaints, if you will, that it's going a long time are actually compliments to the DM. I've seen some DMs that can rush through the sessions in well under 90 minutes, like probably between 60 and 90 minutes. And so, like, let's take, for example, this past week. It starts off, the characters are at the gates of the Citadel Adbar, and they have to try and get inside. And I know with my group, one of the groups I played with, that role play where then the Axelkranz shows up, I think that took like a half an hour or 40 minutes. And we had a great time. And from the point of view of the story, really, the story, like the adventure, that was one page. And it was mostly read aloud text. Like, it didn't specifically say draw this out into a long role playing session, but my players wanted to do some of that, and I picked up on that, and we went back and forth, and we had a great old time. When I actually played it at one of the other tables, the DM, you know, basically different style for the DM. The character showed up. He's like, oh yeah, you want to come in? And the guy's like, yeah, I make a diplomacy check, let me in. Yeah, you made it. They let you in. That was it. It took a minute.
Yep.
So it really comes down to the people at the table, the style of the DM, the willingness to role play. So, I mean, it's you hear me complaining, oh my God, it's too long. But really, I think that's a good thing.
Hey, guy. No,
it is a good thing. And a lot of what this breaks down to is who owns the game. you know, when first edition, when D&D first started, the rules were very simple. The rules were very clean. And the DM and the players owned the game. And what we've seen, I think, over the iterations of D&D is the ownership of the game has kind of been taken out of the hands of the DM and put more into the hands of either the player or the internet. You know, everything is discussed. Everything is, you know, it's, is this right? Is this wrong? And we need, as a hobby, I think, to get back to this understanding that the game is owned by the DM and the players. And if the game is bad, you can certainly blame the adventure. You can certainly blame the rules. But part of the blame also has to be on the DM and the players if the game doesn't go the way the DM and the players want. And the more we can, this is kind of restating what I've already said, but the more we can teach the DMs and the players how to play the game they want to play, then we can build the game better. And so, you know, I think all of this, you know, you talk about role playing for 3 hours, you know, if that's what the players want and that's what the DM wants, that is the greatest thing ever. You know, if you want the take 1 minute and roll a diplomacy check, that's great too. There's two ways to do it, and they both can be equally fun depending on, you know, what the table wants. And I think we're going to be seeing more with both D&D Next and with the adventures that will be coming out that are supporting fourth edition or whatever editions are going to be supported in the future, that we're going to see more adventures like that coming down the pipe.
Good.
Happy for that. I noticed also that Derek's been talking to me a lot about your involvement with the community, Sean. Now, what is your reasoning for being so involved in the community? Especially, is it more pride on your work, or is it more like you just want people to know that you're there? Or what is your personal reasoning behind being on the community so much?
Well, it's probably all of those above. You know, I want people to like what I've done, and so to help them, you know, get the most out of the work I've done, I need to be there to help explain something. It's weird because my background is fiction writing, and when you're a fiction writer, you write your story, you write your novel, you ship it off, and it's done. It's not yours anymore. Now it belongs to, you know, the person who's reading it. And with game design or with adventure design, it's a stranger relationship because you actually have less control even of the adventure than you do of a story, because the DM is such an important facilitator in that story. And the way I see it is, if the DM wants to talk about how to make things better, it's my responsibility as the person who created the adventure to be there to help. And to be honest, another reason is people, you know, a group of people can come up with much better ideas than just a single person or a single pair of writers. So, you know, I'll listen to your podcast, and since I'm a week behind, I'm going to be stealing ideas from you guys or from other podcasts I listen to.
Permission granted.
There you go. Well, yeah. I wasn't going to ask permission, but thank you.
We're a community, right? It's like Mark said, we're a community of gamers, and it's in everyone's best interest that the community thrives. And if taking some ideas from what we've done or from our articles, from our blogs or our podcasts, like, by all means, that's the whole reason we do it, which sounds very much like it's similar to the kind of reasons you do it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, if the hobby is going to thrive and survive, we need to support each other, whether it be, you know, putting the pre-generated characters up like the Wizards community folk did, as a group, or the letter from Axelkrantz in week 3.
That was, you know, awesome.
People created versions of it that I grabbed, printed off, and took to my game. So
me too.
Yep.
So did I. You know,
things like that are are great. And, you know, it again, it goes back to ownership of the game. But, you know, when people ask questions, more than being there to give them an answer, I want to be there to say, that's a great question. What do you think? You know, this is your game. So, you know, you want to know how short rests work. How would you like them to work in your game? Are your players going to enjoy the game more if there are short rests rather than no short rests? So, you know, start, if people understand not just DMing, but understand the game design process, not just what was done, but why it was done, then they can understand it and maybe come up with better solutions than even we did.
Hear, hear.
They're there.
Okay. So I'm gonna change gears for a quick second, just because I got a couple more quick questions I want to get in before we run out of time here. I have had the positive experience of being able to write a couple of pieces for Wizards of the Coast. Certainly not to the extent, Sean, that you have, but I got a chance to write an adventure for Dungeon Magazine within the last year. It got published in September, and I noticed that I wrote two articles for them, and in the one article, what I wrote was almost word for word what got printed. With the other one, with the adventure, a very large piece of it was completely turned on its head and changed and looks nothing like what I submitted. So I'm wondering, with your contributions to this adventure, is there anything that you put in there or wanted to put in there that, for whatever reason, got taken out or changed or removed, that you would, you know, just tell us, if you could tell us a little bit about anything like that?
There were edits to the stuff that I wrote, but there was nothing major taken out or added or too much of that nature. In the past, one of the books I worked on, the hardcover book, Dungeon Delve, which came out right at the beginning of fourth edition, that had three encounters for each level.
I love awesome. That. That is still one of my all-time favorites. I use it so frequently.
Same. Yeah, I love that book. I still, even though it's kind of old and dusty, I still pull it off the shelf like to run, if I need to run for a group of new players or go to a game store and run something, I'll grab that and use it. And the story behind that was, we created the, there were six or seven different freelancers working on that, and we each took three or four different levels and did those. And we worked on them based on the dungeon tiles that had been published at the beginning of fourth edition to create the maps. And so we did all our work. We did all our work based on those maps using the older dungeon tiles. And then after we turned over all this material, we realized, or Wizards realized, that all of those dungeon tiles were out of print. So some poor editor, developer at Wizards had to go through and change all the maps. And then change, since the maps were not obviously the same, make all the changes to the text based on the changes that were made in the maps.
Right. Oh my God.
So, you know, something like that is... Well, I can't say it's not unusual, because it's unusual for that scope of change. But, you know, I'm in the same boat you are, Derek. I've had I've had things that have been basically, you know, reprinted word for word from what I've sent in, and then there have been things that I don't even recognize it when I see it, except for, you know, a thing here and a thing there. But, you know, it's not unusual to have things changed. And if something has changed, it's not even changed necessarily because there's anything wrong with it. It just may be a change of direction that they wanted to go based on their own internal ideas from the outline that you sent in originally.
So, okay. So it sounds like for this War of Everlasting Darkness, you were fortunate. I mean, I guess experience counts a lot. You sort of had a pretty good idea of what they wanted, and so you were able to provide that, so things didn't get changed too significantly. So in that case, of the pieces you provided, is there any one particular piece that stands out that you're like, you know what, of everything that got into this adventure, this one little thing is something I'm particularly proud of for whatever reason?
The spoiler alert. The idea of collecting the different little artifacts of light, basically, as you go, the magical items that light up the darkening, that was something I believe that I had the initial idea for. It wasn't in the initial outline. So I thought, well, why don't we, you know, turn this into something where it will be giving them magic items, and it will also be an ongoing story. And then the creation of the sword nearer the end of encounters was also something that I thought, okay, let's do this and see how it works out. I don't know if you've read that far ahead, but when you get there, you will see.
I have, and okay. I'm really hoping it works with our group. You never know. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's still a few weeks away. We'll see how it plays out. I find with my groups, I can never predict. With my home group, this is how well we work together. We've been playing a long time. When I'm creating a dungeon from scratch with my home group, I can give them the option of going right and left, but I know they're going to go one way over the other, and I don't even have to create the other route because I know they're never going to go that way. And 99 times out of 100, I'm right. When it comes to D&D encounters, not only do I make the right and the left, I get an up, I get a down, I get a backwards, because I have no idea what way they're ever going to go, and I've got to be ready.
Yeah, that's part of the challenge of you know, any game design or any adventure design, is trying to figure out what players are going to do. And you really don't have the space to say, if they do this, do this. If they do this, counter with this. You can say one or two things, but that's it. You're going to have to count on the DM to be able to zig when the players zag.
But that's the flexibility that you've given, that you guys have given this this season of encounters, is the, there's no description on, okay, King Harbrom. Well, I didn't read anywhere where it's very, you know, tactics and all that kind of stuff for King Harbrom. I didn't read any of that, and it gives the DM that flexibility. Once again, it puts the power in the DM's hands to actually challenge those ups and downs and lefts and rights and everything. The only disadvantage in this is that you get a brand new DM at the helm. Well, we see where that goes.
Then you get that's when you get the, I make a diplomacy check, okay, you're good. Because a DM who maybe is less experienced doesn't have that direction provided, and they just, you know, they're lost. They don't know. In many cases, because they have nothing to fall back on, it's not a circumstance that they're familiar with. I mean, I think with both Mark and I, we had played and DM'd previous editions. So, you know, we talked about this in our recounting encounters from last week, with, again, going back to the guards at the gate and even Axel Kranz himself. We played a lot of those NPCs with very different moods, very different personalities. Even though they got the same words coming out of their mouth, we imagine them and envision them differently. And so our two tables played the same encounter, mm-hmm. but the role play was completely different.
Yep. Even as far back as the first session, when we were running two tables, the other DM, you know, did things down in the abandoned Abbey section of Mithrigrist. And so I, you know, she was doing different things. I was doing different things. And then at the end, both groups got up. We finished it about the same time. So both groups got up. Hey, did you find that secret door behind the statue? And they're like, no, what do you mean? What secret door behind the statue? And so we just looked at each other and said, you know, things will be different from table to table. It doesn't mean anyone got anything different or better. We just played a little bit differently. It's all going to be a wash in the end. So be calm.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to say, I love listening to your podcasts, you know, both the recounting and the actual play, because it does remind me of things that I was thinking while I was writing. Because, you know, we were working on this season back in March. So I've probably written, you know, 50 to 100,000 words of other content since then, so I don't even remember what I've written. And so when I hear people talking about playing it, it's you know, it kind of brings back that little jolt of creativity that you have when you're working on it in the first place, and say, oh yeah, I remember, hey, that worked. Or you can hear, you know, someone say, this didn't work, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that I was writing that and thinking, boy, this might not work. I hope it does. So, you know, it's great to hear people's experiences, to give that. It's a feedback. It's a form of feedback, really, even though it's not couched in those terms. It's a form of feedback for the designer to know what worked, what didn't, and where to take those topics next time. So thank you guys for doing that.
Well, thank you for that comment.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Mark and I have actually talked about this before, that although our podcast is the recounting of what we did, in some cases it might almost be more useful if we could play a week ahead, provide that context to the DM so they could listen to, much like you already said, you know, it's like, well, if they did that, I'm going to borrow or steal that idea, or ooh, that's not going to be something my group's going to do. But I mean, it's hard to do. I mean, Wizards certainly doesn't want us to be playing ahead. If anything, they, you know, they want us to play on the same night as everybody else. But
yeah, yeah. I you know, that it would be great if even Wizards could do something like that for DMs. But again, it's a matter of manpower and time and focus that isn't there right now, but maybe at some point it will be.
Well, the spoiler—it's a big spoiler alert, also, right? I mean, if you get some players that are listening to the podcast, like, you're a DM, that's fine, but you start spoiling it for the players.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you do have players who derive fun from beating the adventure, and they are not above, you know, going out and reading the adventure beforehand, or listening, like you said, listening for spoilers beforehand. And right. You know, as crazy as it is to say, you know, if that's what they have fun doing, then, you know, shine on, you crazy diamond.
I was gonna say, let me just add then, for DMs who might be listening to this, who are looking for additional information ahead of time, I just want to remind you that there are D&D Encounters forums on the Wizards forum site, and each season has its own section, and I know I'm very active on those forums. Sean, I know you've been pretty active this season, especially since your name's on the adventure. But the people that contribute and participate on those forums are in many cases a very experienced DMs, and I mean, I keep seeing the same names over and over again. But if you're a new DM looking to start encounters, maybe you're not that familiar with the program, or you're new to D&D, I strongly, strongly encourage you to go and read the comments. I mean, we do a post-mortem on the forums, much like we do with our podcast, but many of the DMs have a chance to run the sessions ahead of time. I know there's a group somewhere out west, they play online the Monday nights. The DMs do like a slot zero, basically. And then Tuesday, if something's come up, they'll contribute. So we mentioned the letter from Axelkranz. I think that was something that came out of their playtest on the Monday night. They said, you know what, if we had a handout, this would be amazing. Tuesday, somebody had it up. So when the rest of us played it on Wednesday, we were able to print it. So it's a fantastic resource that is run by the community. And the more people we have active on that forum from the community, the better it will be. And I mean, it's already pretty good.
Yep, I am nodding my head so vigorously, I think I gave myself whiplash.
Yeah, I heard the microphone rubbing up and down a little bit here. Yeah, well, the other thing is also, I mean, I know I'm fairly active-ish on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know, if you can get a couple of resources and make some connections as DMs and such, you can always discuss stuff via direct message. I mean, I discuss weekly with this guy from Calgary. You know, and he asked me, because he knows I play, you know, I play, what, a couple of days ahead of the norm, I think. And he says, he goes, well, what happened this week, Mark? You know, like, I'm DMing, and I just want to know, well, what do you think of this? I looked at this. What do you think of that? I looked at that. And, you know, we Twitter back and forth. So, I mean, communicating with other DMs and people from the community, yeah, go for it.
Absolutely.
Start a network.
Well, I think that's got everything that, you know, that's certainly a positive note to end on. Mark, do you got anything else? Sean, you got anything else?
I've got one more thing. Sean, if as a word of advice for those people that do want to possibly start a blog or people who want to actually start writing adventures for Wizards of the Coast, what do you recommend that they do?
I can only talk about my own experience, which was getting into it through organized play, which is right now Living Forgotten Realms. And organized play campaigns are always looking for new authors, new writers, new DMs to continue the ongoing story of those campaigns. And with the, you know, with the ramping up of D&D Next, I don't know what the future of those campaigns are going to be, but I do know that there will be a future. So, you know, as we move in that direction, always look for ways to get into it, not necessarily through writing, but through DMing in organized play. You know, if you go to Gen Con or Origins or PAX or Winter Fantasy, if you become a DM for Wizards, you are getting your name out there. You are seeing adventures through the eyes of both, well, the writer, the player, and the DM. You are learning what works and what doesn't. And those are all steps in the right direction toward getting getting your name in front of Wizards and learning the craft as you go.
Very good advice.
I could give 1,000 more words of advice, but we only have, you know, we only have one lifetime. but that's, you know, that's how I did it, and so that's the best I can speak.
Yeah, I found, not that my involvement with Wizards is anywhere on the level with Sean's, but I know for me, just writing the blog and having that exposure and that experience to the gaming community and to Wizards has certainly helped me get my foot in the door. And that would be my advice to anyone who's looking to get started is, you know, do what you can to get some exposure, whether it's writing a fan blog or whether it's, you know, like Mark said, or like Sean said, writing for one of the adventures for the community, or anything you can do to get experience and get exposure is going to be good.
Well, this podcast is my we do it together, Derek, but myself personally is my personal achievement. So, you know, I'm enjoying doing this big time.
Just to add to what Derek said, I have to share this story. At one point, I was working on something. I can't even remember what it was now. But I needed a resource from Wizards, so I emailed Greg Bilsland, who is one of the producers for Wizards. And I said, I think I needed pre-gens. I need to know what their races and classes are. And he said, well, I don't have them on hand. Here, just go to dungeonsmasters.com. And, you know, what you need is all right there. So, you know, Wizards is pointing me to you, Derek, to get what I need. So, you know, doing things like that definitely gets you moving in the right direction.
Definitely.
Thanks for sharing that. That's that's certainly awesome to hear.
Well, yep. Derek's the one that got me started on 20-foot radius, and yep, now we're here. So,
which I also read regularly.
Which we appreciate.
Yes, yeah. Big time.
Okay, well, you know, Sean, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak to us. I want to thank you for putting out this fantastic adventure, War of Everlasting Darkness. I can't say enough good things about it. I've been running and playing the D&D Encounters program since the very first day, and at the end of every season, I do a report card on my blog, and unless something, you know, unless the car falls off a cliff here in the last 4 weeks, this one is so far my favorite, and I think it's going to be the one that I give the highest grades to. You're setting the bar pretty high for whoever's coming with the next season.
Oh, most definitely, and I have to basically agree with Derek. This has been, as a DM, you've rejuvenated my love for D&D Encounters, and it's unless, like Derek says, something falls off a cliff and my character gets killed, being the DM, this is going to be by far my favorite adventure.
Well, I appreciate that. You're giving me the energy to stay up late writing tonight, so thank you for that, and thank you for the podcast.
Thank you. And
our pleasure.
So, This concludes our podcast. Sean, thank you very much for being with us this evening. And
you're welcome.
Yeah, and basically good luck with your future writing, and hopefully we can see your name on a lot more of the D&D encounters coming up.
All right, thanks, guys.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit dungeonsmaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20foot, and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D encounters. That's 20footradius20ftradius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.